Thank you so much for tuning in to the F5 Recovery Podcast. We're so happy that you decided to join us today. This is Juan Pretty Ricky. I'm joined by my co-host, Kirsten Hoovenin, our new co-host, Scott College, and Adam Martin. We're really grateful that we're able to do this show, and that is all possible by our amazing sponsors, the F5 Project, the Ridge Treatment and Reentry Center, GoAwayBear.com, as well as shirts from Fargo and Heat Transfer Warehouse, which has given us this amazing space that we have for our new season of the show. So today, no topics, but we just wanted to dive in to talk to the one, the only, Scotty Tuhati. Yeah, I like that.
Is that your nickname?
Scott. That's Ricky's nickname for me. Yeah. It's kind of stuck.
Ricky's nickname
for me. Yeah. For me.
Oh,
it's kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who calls you Scotty Tuhati other than him?
Oh, on my website.
Well, it's stuck with him.
On my website. I don't know if you know that.
That's weird.
OnlyFans.
Fan club.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
I think it's feet pics. I'm not sure.
That is disgusting.
Scotty Tuhati, yeah.
So, welcome to the show. Anyway.
Wow, yeah. Here we go. Well, thank you for having me. Yeah, thank you for the invite, Adam.
Yeah.
How'd you get the invite?
We were driving.
Yeah.
You know, and we did Scotty's Corner, and I think I don't know if you guys saw this, but he threw out this thing about if we get 200 likes before 6 p.m., we'll do Scotty's Corner while we're driving back from Dickinson. Mm-hmm. And he's like over in the corner or in the other seat going, it's never going to happen. You're not going to get 200 likes. Yeah. What was it? 57 minutes? Something like that. So anyway, started doing Scotty's Corner and it went well. I
think people liked it because it's in spite of me.
I think that there's could like, be part of it.
Yeah. They're just like, ooh, we can finally get at them.
Somebody told me they made 10 fake accounts. I don't know how to do that, but they were able to make 10 fake accounts.
They made some fake Facebook accounts.
Yeah, yeah.
Like run up the likes.
So that was
kind of... Discussing Scotty's Corner. What is it, Scotty's Corner?
Life. Okay. We actually just, it's kind of a natural flow.
Yeah.
BS, in essence. But it was about our...
We just call it Scotty.
You get Scottied.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody talks over you now,
oh,
apparently you get Scottied.
Okay.
Yeah.
He made that.
Just going to start using that for a lot of things.
No, it's if he talks over you.
Yep.
Or if he's the last one to talk.
You've been Scottied.
Like, you've been Scottied.
So Adam has this thing. So, you know, he's like the CEO.
It's not my thing. It's a thing.
It's Adam. Yeah, it's a thing. Anyway,
in most environments, at like an organization or like whatever, the CEO is usually the last one to talk, right? Like everyone gives their updates, and then CEO does his thing, and I can see Scott just like,
I got one more thing.
Adam forgot to say something.
That's not how it goes.
So he always throws me under the bus and then talks last, and they're like, "Who's the CEO here?" It's definitely not me.
Well, I think it's part of it is that I get excited because there's one more thing that didn't get mentioned and it's important. So I've really been working on it the last month and a half. Like when he's done talking, I'm over in the corner of him. And he just looks at me and I'm like, I'm done.
Why curb that? Don't pull that back. Those are ideas.
See?
We're trying to have some structure.
Oh, yeah, structure.
Yeah, because
we're F5. Yeah, we're so structured.
Then another person does it, and then another person does it, and it's like being at a like an AA meeting or whatever. It's like, anybody got a burning desire to talk before we end? And then that guy goes, and then he talks like 5 minutes over the time. And then some other guy's like, oh, I got something to say too.
I brought up something I forgot to mention.
Meetings are annoying.
Yeah.
None of us are as dumb as all of us.
No. Oh. And there's always that one guy.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Can you say that again?
Yeah, there's always that one guy.
None of us are as dumb as all of us.
That's good.
Like if you got people you trust to do stuff, let them do their stuff. You don't have to have another meeting.
To have a meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Go outside and drink coffee and
smoke a cigarette. Yeah.
And if they don't do their job, can them.
Mm-hmm. Can you get fired in AA?
In AA?
Yeah.
I mean, my sponsors have fired me in the past. Same. But, I mean, maybe it's not fired. Maybe it's like dumped or encouraged to like, move in a different direction.
It's not
I don't
you,
know.
It's me.
The ones that do it really well say,
"What are we actually doing here?" Yeah.
The ones that do it well are the ones that say, "I don't think you're growing with me. I think you would be a better fit with this person."
One time I had a guy that was like, you know,
that'd be hard to get upset about.
I think that I've grown beyond you and I'm going to get a different sponsor that I have. I was like, damn.
Like he outgrew you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The sponsee.
It was awesome.
Oh. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, well.
Oops. That's what I did.
See you on the flip side.
Have you and your new sponsor work on humility.
Growing beyond you.
That is good.
Those are always good motivators, though. I always went on to do more stuff for my recovery because you're tanking, obviously, if your sponsor's like, you actually don't ever call me, so.
Yeah. It does make you work harder.
Yeah.
Like when you get that slap in the face that, like, because you are slough. I mean, I've done it too, where it's, you're doing something, you've got all these things going on, and somebody probably needs you a little bit more than you're giving the time to. And then they're like, you know, I can't get a hold of you. I'm going to have to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Then you're like, oh, shit, I need to start doing better. And it does actually make you do better. So, but none of my sponsors don't drop you now right now. I'll work harder.
Have you always had a local sponsor, you guys? You guys have always had somebody in town?
Mm-hmm.
What's better for you? Distance or close?
Oh, I guess it depends on, you know, I became more of a fan of having multiple sponsors. I've kind of been against it in the past because it feels like you can just like sponsor yourself.
Yeah.
Tell this one this much, tell this one this much, make a decision, you know, or ask them both the same thing and then pick and choose what you're going to do, you know. But at the end of the day, like, sponsors aren't really there to tell you what to do.
Right.
It's, you know, it's like the sponsors that I've had, they usually just kind of run me through the options, but leave the decision ultimately up to me. So, you know, I've come to the point where it's like, it's probably okay to have multiple sponsors. Mm-hmm. So having one distant and one local or two local or whatever, but I think for me, when I was just being sponsored by one person, the distant sponsor is like, it was difficult for me to like be fully transparent.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a lot easier to not be transparent when they're not local and you're not going to the same meetings as them or, you know, stuff like that. So essentially it's like grow or go when you're long distance sponsored, you know, like it's really like humbles you to like take the corrective action without being monitored, essentially. Mm-hmm. But local is good because it's, you know, you usually go to the same meeting. It's easier to stay in contact. Mm-hmm. If you're like freaking out, you can go get some coffee, you know. But I think the number one person for me was my go-to guy, not necessarily my sponsor.
Yeah.
Like my buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I probably treated him like a sponsor, but it was just so much easier to like, if I was fearful of like talking to my sponsor about something or plus a sponsor's not going to like, he doesn't always answer his phone.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, especially if shit hits the fan at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, he's got kids, he's got a big job, he's got, you know, whatever, to have an expectation that they're always going to be available is ridiculous. So Fred was like my guy where it was just like, almost like co-sign each other's bullshit, but at the same time trying to be like, we co-sign each other's bullshit and then be like the next day be like, you know, we should really grow, you know, we should probably not spend so much money when we go to the casino or something like that, or whatever the thing is. So,
I get it.
So I think someone local is a good
Ricky the casino. There's a lot of money there.
I'll be honest, dude. If you call, it would be so hard for me to just like not go with you to the casino, because I know it's like your relapse. But it would be like if I came to you and said, well, maybe it's a little different. But if I came to you and was just like, hey, let's go to the bar, and like get some drinks, would you be weirded out?
Yeah, especially if like the bar that we'd go to would be a place where I gamble. Because then I wouldn't go for drinks.
Oh, man, it would be all out.
I would just be like...
He'd be gambling and just, like, going crazy. I'd be drinking. I'd be doing rails on the toilet in the back.
Like, I'm just... Like, I will completely forget that I came with you. Because then I'll be like,
somebody shoot me a text so I could watch this train wreck.
Yeah. Maybe we could do a podcast there.
Yeah, do it right after.
Yeah.
Ricky lost thousands of dollars. Adam's drunk and has a warrant out.
Yeah. And here we grow.
Yeah.
So it's, for me, I've always had a local sponsor. I've never had a somebody from distance. But I do agree there's, you know, I have two or three guys that aren't my sponsors that I bounce shit off all the time. Like Derek Cheney, Derek's been a big part of that, you know, as far, and Tony, you know, when I first got sober, I was hanging out with both of them for a long time, you know. Yeah. I mean, I would call them at 10:30 and say, hey, you guys want to go for coffee? And they're like, it's 10:30 college.
Yeah.
At night.
Yeah.
we don't drink coffee at 10:30. Especially coffee. Yeah. So, because I was pretty, when I came back, in 2013, I was a mess. So I was going 100 miles. Cheney always told me, he goes, you should never do cocaine, ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's too bad.
I know. I was like, now I would think I should, just to see what happens.
You had like an evidence locker and all that stuff, right?
You can't go in there.
No. I don't think it would have done you like you think. Like, because if you're like super hyper, when you get drunk and it's a downer, right?
Yeah.
Typically, your body responds different to like cocaine, from what I've seen. Mm. This is why you see like people with ADHD able to take like ADHD meds and not get triggered from it. You know?
Is this a recovery podcast, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So you got buddies.
Yeah. I'm not telling you to do cocaine. I'm just saying.
No, good, good. Yeah.
But there's truth in, you know,
how
your body responds to it.
Well, that helps me then. I don't have to think about that
anymore. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
It literally would do nothing for you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah.
Well, Scott, last time you were on the podcast.
I sweat a lot.
we're not going to get into that. Last time you were on the podcast, Scott, you were a guest in season two. Now you're like a co-host. So assuming that people haven't, they don't know you. They're like, who's this guy? Just showing
up. They don't know who you are. Go ahead and tell your story.
Yeah, tell your story a little bit.
Well, they might have watched Scotty's corner.
No, they didn't.
We had over 1,000 views.
Yeah, it was your
family,
brothers, sisters.
Yeah, I got a lot of them.
Yes, yeah, you do. Probably like 1,000.
13.
Yeah, you could talk about your family.
13 siblings.
Yeah, well, one passed away, but so I have 12 that are living. Yes.
Wow,
it's awesome.
And you're the youngest.
I'm the baby. 10 sisters.
Holy.
Have you ever listened to my story when I've.
Not really.
No, I didn't think so.
I knew you were a legend. I just didn't have to remember all the shit.
Yeah, you want to share your story again?
I just know you have daughters because they're so gorgeous. You can't miss them.
I have four of them. Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're really gorgeous.
You have four daughters?
I do.
Yep.
You do that. It's like when you always ask Camille, you're married? She's like told you 100 times.
I don't remember like everybody's little, like personal stuff.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like that's not a little personal thing though.
That's not a personal thing. It's
like I forgot one thing. Time. Now I just make fun of that.
Oh,
I
forgot. Okay.
Yeah. Scotty's just like, you know, how do you never remember? I'm like, I'm telling a joke, Scott.
You didn't.
I mostly think about me, so yeah. I don't remember. Yeah.
So well, anyway, my story is. You know, I was in law enforcement for 20 years, was a probation officer for 10 of those years. I always felt alcohol was a big part of my life. My dad was an alcoholic, come from a small town. You know, I remember a story about him being falling off a stool at the bar, local bar, and laying on the ground. Somebody told me this story when I was like 14. And he continued the full conversation from the floor, you know, and at the time I didn't think it was funny. It was like, it was embarrassing, but now it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Cause I've done it.
Yeah.
I've been there. It's like, what's up? Yeah. I'll be good. Just let me sit here for a little bit. I'll be good. So it's like, you know, I always thought I'll never be like him. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm never going to be that guy. And I ended up being that guy, you know, and I, been married twice, have two ex-wives, you know, but the cool thing is I have a really cool relationship with both of them. And, you know, part of that is I got sober in 2005, was my first run, August 18th, 2005. And I remember that morning, my wife at the time came downstairs And she just looked at me, and it was that look, if you are in recovery and understand it, it was that look of disgust and that look of just, I don't have anything left. My tank is empty, you know? And she just looked at me and she said, I just can't do this anymore. So that's when I called my sister, who'd been sober at the time, probably like 28, 29 years, because she's 38 years sober now or something like that. But so she took me to a meeting. So we were going to the Moorhead Thursday night, you know, over by the Budweiser plant then. And I'm like, we couldn't find it. So I'm like, God doesn't want us to go to this meeting, Joanne. Sure, she goes, bullshit, we're finding this meeting. So we went to that meeting, and it was, at that time, it was a call-up meeting. Remember?
Yeah, yes.
You know, so they would call people out of the audience, and I'm like,
dread it.
Oh, I'd be sitting there. I was sitting there. I looked over. I said, if they call me, I'm walking out that goddamn door.
Yeah.
And little did I know they're not going to call the new guy with the deer in the headlight look.
Yeah.
So, of course, I thought it was all about me. And as soon as, you know, they didn't, of course, they didn't call on me. So I started going to meetings, and I stayed sober for 4.5 years, but it was miserable.
Yeah.
I hated being sober. I used to go out to the bar with my buddy, drinking buddies, and drink Diet Coke. And it was just, you know, I thought I was missing something, you know. So I would just continue to do that and put myself in situations. And it was a situation, it was in 2010. I had gone down to Minneapolis to do a fantasy football draft with, I knew one of the guys. Kevin was my friend at the time, or a good friend of mine. So he said, do you want to join this? I said, sure. So we go down there, and we're sitting there. We golfed all that day, and it was like 95 degrees, and then they stopped at Buffalo B-Dubs. Mm-hmm. And I went to the bathroom, and one of the dudes, none of them knew my story. You know, Kevin knew I was sober for over four years, but they set a beer in front of me, and it was, you know, Miller Lite. It was frosty, the whole nine yards, you know, how their mugs look. And I come out of the bathroom, and I'm just like, whoa. And I just had a big fight with my wife at the time about, she couldn't understand why people would drive to Minneapolis to do a fantasy football draft. But anyway, I know at the time was like, what the hell's wrong with you? Everybody does it. And she goes, no, they don't, Scott. So I saw that beer and I picked it up. I can see it as clear as right now. And my buddy looked at me and he goes, what are you doing? I said, don't, a typical alcoholic answer. I said, don't worry about it. I got this. And then it just, that was the start of it. So my relapse, and then I tried to get sober 2 or 3 times, you know, and then I'd be lying about my drinking. And, you know, that's the other thing is we lie about the stupidest shit.
Yeah.
You know, I remember there was one time when I was sneaking around that there was a lock that was broken in our garage. So I was going to fix it. It was a Friday night. Mm-hmm. And I told her I was going to go to Menards at 5 o'clock. So wouldn't be home, blah, blah, blah. And I ended up going at noon so I could go drink.
To Menards.
At noon, to Menards, yeah. To get the lock. So I get out there, you know, and I have 6-8 beers into it, you know, already. So I get out and she comes out and she goes, hey, I thought you went to Menards like at 5. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I did, you know, that's why I was late, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, well, the receipt says 12:05
p.m. That's like, oh, man.
Come on, Scott, you're better than that.
Who keeps
it was in a goddamn bag. It's like, goddamn Menards person, what the hell did you put in the bag for?
Their fault.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, it's
their
like.
Their registers are broken.
So then, yeah, that's what I said. That's exactly
it. I went back and returned it and then got a different one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had 7 excuses.
You don't do receipts for that.
But you just, I mean, as stupid as that is and as simple as that is, that's where my mind goes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking for every angle, trying to figure out. So that went on for a while, and then
it's exhausting.
Then 2012 she came to me and she said, and this is really hard for me to talk about this part of it, but she came to me and said, it's us or the booze. Mm-hmm. You know, and I chose the booze, and we ended up getting divorced within 2 or 3 months. And one of the things she said to me is, she goes, she said, I don't know if you guys know what a governor is, like on a vehicle.
Yeah,
keeps it from going too fast, you know, or certain speeds. She said, I've been your governor as much as that's not a good thing. She said, I've been your governor. She goes, you're going to be out of control in 6 months if you don't do something different. Mm. And I'm like, screw that. 3 months later, I got a DUI.
Yeah. See ya, governor.
See ya, one. Just kidding, Jen. That was a joke.
We love Jen.
They do. She's She's a good person. Very good. She's
you didn't awesome pick. Mom. You didn't pick drinking over your marriage. I mean, you know what I mean, like.
Right. I didn't have a choice.
Your actions did.
My actions. Yeah. Yeah. Your heart did. Yeah, and that's the part of it when you're in it. You know, is like, and I think it's hard for like the normies to understand that it's.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know, the idea is that my disease picked.
Yeah.
The alcohol over my family. Yeah. You know, and that there's a part in the book where it talks about, you know, it becomes our higher power.
Yeah.
You know, and alcohol was my higher power. You know, it was the only thing that made me feel better for a little while.
Yeah.
So I ended up burning it to the ground. Got on the front page of the form for my DUI.
Number three?
Yeah, I was number three in the thing.
See, and I do listen.
And I remember I was driving to a Vikings game like 6 a.m. and me and a buddy, and we were drinking orange juice vodkas on the way to the game. And my buddy Kevin, the one that initially was with me, he texted me, said, "Dude, you're on the front page of the form." And I'm like, "Cool." He goes, "No, not cool."
Not cool.
He goes, "You didn't tell me about your DUI." And I'm like, "Oh, shit." So there I was, number three in there. But what they did is not because I'm so important. I always kind of clarify that or qualify that. It was because they decided to print everybody that got a DUI in the month of September of 2012. So
it was
what a odd anyway.
And actually at the time Paul Laney was the sheriff, and I called him, and he was actually my surveillance officer when I worked for probation. So he and I were good friends. I said, "Paul, what the hell?" He goes, "I know, Scott, there's nothing I can do about it." He said, "It's public record." I said, "I haven't been convicted." You know, so but anyway, it was one of those things, and I know this is gonna get Adam fired up, so those people.
Yeah, I think that people get confused on like mugshots and wanted posters,
mm-hmm.
right? Like originally wanted posters was like a thing because there's like an APB out on them, right? All points bulletin.
Good job. Yeah. So proud of you.
Yeah, learning my
cop lingo.
Yeah. Or they had like a warrant out, or they skipped bail or something like that. Like the warrant, it's a warrant basically, is like a wanted poster, right? And what we turned it into is that like posting mugshots of someone who's been through the process but hasn't even been convicted yet. Mm-hmm. Or the ones that really get me is when they post all those mugshots and then they're found not guilty.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then they do nothing. And we were up at the Capitol for like legislation to do mugshot reform. And the Newspaper Association was directly asked. They were like, "If you make if you post a mugshot and then it's found out that they're innocent or it was a no contest or whatever, do you make a reference to it later?"
Yeah.
Or whatever. And their exact words was, "There's no way we could keep track." And I was like, "Bullshit. You kept track of all the courts."
Yeah.
Like all you have to do is just like read the public record.
Right. Innocent doesn't sell papers though.
No, right.
It only doesn't. The drama.
Yeah, cuz I had a young girl who was convicted. She was convicted. Mm-hmm. And of child neglect, which in turn like was the death of her baby.
Yeah.
And she went to prison, all the whole works or whatever, and while she was in prison the autopsy report came out. So number one, they didn't even wait for the autopsy report. And it came out after she was convicted and in prison. And it came back saying that the baby died of SIDS.
Oh.
So it wasn't even her fault.
And so it wasn't even her fault. And so it, not only did she have to deal with the trauma of thinking that she did something until that autopsy, but she had to serve time in prison away from her other kids.
Yeah.
The CPS came and took her kids. Plus her mugshot just went viral because, you know, a woman that kills her baby, that's going to go, you know, like all that stuff. And then it was found out that she was not even guilty. And then they, you know, she gets out of prison and they, here's the crazy thing. When they announced that she was not convicted, that she was no longer guilty, they used her fucking mugshot. Jeez. That's what turned me over to the edge, like over the edge, was that you used her mugshot to say that she was innocent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
And so I have, I got no, you know, like the news media companies are, they're needed 100%. especially if during war times, sure. You know, like when they need, we need mass communications. But like the whole clickbait stuff is just.
They're also a business.
They're also a business, yes. Yeah. And they need definitely. The clicks, and they need the monthly subscriptions and the paywalls and, you know, all that stuff. But I know media companies like in Houston, they abolished using mugshots, and their clicks went up. You know, like people like mugshot. It's like the number one thing clicked on for newspaper companies. And so to say that your views and everything and your, you know, analytics gone up mm-hmm. since you stopped using mugshots really says something. Mm-hmm. So anyways, got me all
wound up, baby. I like it. This is what I do best. Get Adam going.
Yeah, got me going.
So you're driving to Minneapolis. Find out you're
yeah, so I find out on the front page, yep. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, whatever, you know. And then, so I ended up going about 9 more months of just really down in the dumps. I was living in my sister's basement, you know, thought I was really cool going to the bar and trying to pick up the ladies and, you know, say, hey, you want to go to my place? I said, nah, my sister lives with me. Let's go to your place, you know, kind of that kind of, that's the craziness of this disease is that you walk around like you got swag, you know, like you're cool. And it's like, you are a loser, dude. You are a loser. Your life is shit, you know, and
you weren't a loser
at the time.
You
I was
just sick.
I was sick. Yeah, yeah. That's true. Good point, Adam.
That's like, if we believe it's a disease, we can't.
Right.
Like if someone has cancer and they're in the hospital, you're like, oh, you're a loser.
Right.
You know?
No, I totally have that yeah. mindset too. That yeah. I guess in your mind, you
when
know,
you say
thinking,
it about yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never yeah. say it about,
I don't people. Say it about other people because I know that's not the case. It's just, you're in a bad place. You know, it's kind of like what we do with F5, you know, you know, there's a lot of people. I always say as a probation officer, 95% of the people I supervise were good people making bad choices. Yeah. You know, 5% are bad people doing bad shit.
Yeah.
And that's mm-hmm. public safety. Mm-hmm. That's my own.
No,
you can do it your own, you know. But I just feel that that's the truth. There's just some people that no matter what we do to help them, mm-hmm. that behavior's not going to change. You know, but a lot of people,
they're not getting the right treatment for whatever they're suffering.
There may not
right.
even be I mean, some people are so traumatized
yeah.
that it's like, it's kind of like getting like a, you know, like people with like TBI, right? Traumatic yeah. brain injury. Mm-hmm. There's some things that they're no longer able to do.
Right.
There's yeah. been a traumatic injury. Right. But I think that can happen to your soul and in your emotions too for people who don't have a TBI. It could be like TSI or, you know, TEI, like traumatic emotional injury.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm just making yeah. words up.
And I think there's a point where it's hard to come back from, but like, are you putting them in a situation that's making that better? Or like, you know, some of these guys get put in isolation. It just like yes. creates this whole nightmare. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we could just be nicer.
So for example, we can all agree that Hitler was an evil guy. Right. And some people were like, man, I wish I could go back in time when he was a baby and like take him out or whatever. But could you, like, if you saw like a baby and you didn't know that it was like Hitler,
would he have the mustache?
He's a little baby.
If he had that mustache, I'm taking him off. So,
but at one time he was probably, you know, he 100% was innocent. Children are innocent.
Yeah. Right?
Something happened along the line. Right. To push him in that direction. I'm not justifying it. That his actions, he totally should have been held accountable. But I'm just saying that, like, I don't think anyone's born evil.
No.
You know?
And I guess to qualify that a little bit is, you know, there's just certain situations that you can't come back from. You know, that, I mean, maybe inside the prison, you know, if they're, and we know this, you know, just working with the DOCR, there's guys that are in there for murder, but they're helping guys. You know, they've made a change. There yeah. doesn't mean that they're not good people. You know, I just think sometimes it's just they end up doing bad things and yeah. they just yeah. they're there. But a majority of the people that, like I said, that I worked with were just in the same boat I was. I just didn't get caught. You know, we yeah. talk about that a lot. You know, that, and then I did get caught, you know. And part of it is, when I was going through this, one of the stories I have is Tony, our good friend Tony, I was at the Casey's on University, and my boss was driving me around at the time. I was a salesman. He's driving me around to my sales calls because I couldn't drive, you know? But we'd get drunk, go to the bar as soon as we're done with the sales, you know. But Tony pulled up on his motorcycle, and I'm like, I was trying to get down in the seat as far as I could so he wouldn't see me. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I whoa, 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 motorcycle taking off. I'm like, yes, he didn't see me. All of a sudden, there's a knock on my window. He goes, roll it down. You know, that was back in the day because he's old too, like me. But he just rolled the window down. I said, hey, what's up? He goes, dude, he goes, we can still be friends even if you're out there drinking.
Yeah.
And that meant a lot to me because that was about 2 months after that I came back to the rooms of AA. And
because you're the only one that shuts that door.
Right. That's exactly what we do. You know, I talk about, you know, I go to the Saturday morning men's. That's my home group. There's like 140 guys in that room, you know. And I used to drive by there on Saturday mornings hungover.
Yeah.
Just wishing I could go back. And I didn't have the balls to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have the courage to go walk through that door because the shame and the remorse, the disease just keeps me out of the room.
But you hear 100 different excuses. Like, right. Well, they're clicky. They don't like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And the cool thing was, you know, when I came back, everybody was really, you know, in 2013. Like, so what happened for me is on July 7th, of 2013, at 2:32 a.m., I was going to take my own life. You know, I had insurance for my daughters, had everything laid out. I was just, and I don't know if my daughters have heard this whole story, so I don't know if they're listening, but had everything out for them, and I was like, they're going to be so much better off without me.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have money, they're going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, it's time. You know, and I was ready. I had everything set out. In my sister's, I mean, she would.
When you make peace with that, and you're like, "This will be better."
In my sister's basement, where she would have found me.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think about any of that stuff when you're in that. You know, they talk about this black place you go that you know you just can't see anything else, and that's where I was at. Mm-hmm. And you know, I ended up, for whatever reason, that morning or that at that time, I got on my knees, and I just prayed and I just said, I know you're out there. I know this is something, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just said, either lift this obsession or let me end this thing. Because I can't keep living like this. It just sucks so much. You know, and in the book, it talks about that jumping off point, you know. Mm-hmm. We can't live with it. We can't live without alcohol.
And then I called him and I said, I heard you're ready to be helped.
Yeah, that did not happen.
Direct line to God.
It's like, oh, I went through Adam. Are we good? And he's like, yep, we got this.
John Fisher sent me a text yesterday, and he's like, hey, man, I just, you know, don't want to sound sappy, but I'm just really appreciate that we get to work together in our lives, you know, whatever. And I was like, yeah, it's pretty cool that we're doing the plan that I pitched to God that he approved that he originally wrote anyway. So
I like John. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
So I ended up, you know, calling three people or texting three people at 2:30 in the morning, 2:32, and two of them responded. You know, and one was my sister and two other people in AA, and the one was Lee Johnson, who was my first sponsor, you know, and he met me for coffee that night, and he ended up coming. And he just looked at me and goes, man, you look rough. And I was in terrible shape. And he just, one of the things he said to me, and it's just stuck with me, is he said, Scott, you don't have to live with that impending doom anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't? You know, as simple as that is, if I say that to a normal person, they're like, well, duh, of course you don't. Yeah. Just do something different. But when you're in that mess and when you're in the middle of that shit, you can't think about that stuff.
It's like a blanket.
And it really opened up the door for me to, you know, and he talked to me about, you know, getting honest with people. So, like I was talking about, my banker at the time was one of my best friends. And he had told me 3 weeks before, he said, I can't keep covering your ass, dude. He said, we either have to be friends and you have to stop banking with me or vice versa, you know. He said, you're going really down a dark road. And he said, I'm really, really worried about you. And that had a big impact on me, too. And so one of the things he told me is, you know, because I'd been out gambling, doing a lot of stuff, writing checks that couldn't cover. And I went to him and laid it all out for him. And I thought he was just going to rip me a new asshole. And he didn't. He just said, I appreciate your honesty. And he said, I'll work with you. And he helped me rebuild my life. on that financial side. You know, that's the stuff that we don't see. You know, we can't see that. We think everybody's going to be against us. But when we get honest and we start taking different actions, people have the tendency to say, I will help you.
Yeah, people will help you. Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And he's become one of my best friends through that process. But it's a process of, you know, trust and faith and understanding that people, they're not judging you and they're not out to get you and they're not, you know, but our disease wants us to think that and continue with that. So from that grew, you know, my relationship and, you know, I have a relationship now. I always say I have a relationship with all four of my daughters that nobody can take away. Not a judge, not a court, not an attorney, not my ex-wives. Only I can if I decide to take a drink today. And I think that's the part, you know, where we were talking about, you know, I didn't really choose alcohol over them.
Yeah.
But today I have a choice not to take a drink.
Yeah.
You know, and but if I decide to take a drink today, all my choices go away because I'm just going to burn it to the ground.
Then you're sick again. Yep. Yeah.
And so I think that's the part of it is I always talk to them when I sponsor guys and just talking about their process and, you know, how we figure this thing out. You know, we don't figure it out. Yeah. We just have faith. You know, I always live off of the, I either live with fear or I live with faith.
Yeah.
You know, fear will keep me from doing a lot of things or, you know, doing something I shouldn't be doing. Where faith is I just take the actions and hope things work out.
Yeah.
And I know they will, you know, as long as I do those things. And your husband always, I've always told him, he had a huge impact on me too, as far as, you know, he talked about watching that big dude up there crying, talking about his kids and the life he had, you know, and what he's become as a father. Because he always, he's hard on himself.
Yeah.
You know, he's always, I don't know if I'm a good, I said, you're a freaking awesome dad. You know, but we can't see that, you know, but everybody else can see it. You know, and people tell me that. But he always, he talked about this thing about when you're going through it, you know, it sucks. When you're in the shit, it sucks. But when you can get to that other side and look back at it, you know you're okay, you know? And that really stuck with me for a long time. And, you know, Lee always said to me, he goes, Scott, if you're standing in warm shit, you know, you're standing in the warm shit, you know, it's warm, right? Yep, yep. And he said, he goes,
I'm a Jedi Lee.
Yeah. Guess what? He said, it's still shit.
Yeah.
You need to step out of it to move forward. You know, and that just, that's something, you know, you, little things like that you hear along the road that you're like, why are you telling me about, I usually don't stand in shit.
Like I should have known.
It was North Dakota. It's usually not warm.
No, it's probably, well, it steams.
Yeah. If you're outside. If it's like right away.
Well, yeah, that's, you're usually standing there right away. If you're,
right away?
Well.
You shit yourself? Who shit is this?
I think it's just, what's the word we use? It's not literal. He's talking about life.
Metaphor.
Metaphor, yes. Oh, the metaphor. Yeah. It's really not shit.
Allegory.
Oh, not literally.
Not literally shit. Yeah. Oh.
Thank our sponsors life. Again for sponsoring this podcast.
Go away, man. Oh, okay.
Speaking of warm shit, we'd like to thank goawaybear.com.
Get rid of it. So anyway, I'm in a really good
amazing.
Place.
I'm just kidding.
So today I have a really good life and I have a great job. You know, Adam and I got connected in 2018. And that was another story of, you know, we're two guys that probably aren't going to mix. You know, we didn't. We would stand apart from, you know,
really?
Ex-cop, ex-film.
We played poker together every once in a while. We never really, it was more, he was like, he was like my Culligan guy. Like, I would just walk by the water cooler and we'd be saying hi to each other. That's kind of, you know what I mean? Okay. Like, we didn't really.
Did you get it?
Because he used to sell water. So, yes. Like.
That's what I
But
did.
Not for that.
For 20 years.
Yeah.
You sold water and then went into law enforcement?
No, I was in law enforcement first and
then went.
Moved into the sales.
Yeah.
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 So. But yeah, we didn't really connect. We were just kind of more like, hey, guys, you know? And then one day, I mean, it'll be another episode that we can talk about it, but he just approached me and he was like, hey, what do you know about this program with the state called Free Through Recovery? And I was a provider for it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know, most people would probably be like, oh, I tell you. I was just like, why?
Yeah, I was like, why?
And he was like, I'm thinking about becoming a provider, which essentially, you know, would have been competition, you know.
And I was like, out of all the people that I knew were providers, I never worried. Like, I was like, I'm an ex-sales marketing guy. Like, I'm obsessed. I'm passionate, you know. But I knew Scott with his background, because it's a combination with, like, the Department of Corrections mm-hmm. and peer support and, you know, all that stuff. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, Scott is in recovery, and he used to be a probation officer. Like, this is legit competition now. And I was like, well, I can either compete with him and he'll go home crying.
Oh, boy. That's his story.
We can partner up. And so what I said to him, I was like, you should just give some thought about us partnering. And it took him about a week. And then he came back and we made it happen and became the fastest growing nonprofit in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. We got over, between two organizations, over 100 employees.
Yep.
So
we serve over 700 participants.
It's 700 now.
That's awesome.
Between the two, the two organizations.
That's crazy, Scotty.
Yeah. So you know what?
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam. And it was actually my ex-wife who called me and said, "Hey, they've got this," because it started like in February of 2018, and this was like October, and she knew where I was really struggling at my job and just hated being there. It got really toxic there and things.
This is the water?
The water. So,
okay,
yeah.
All right. I'm trying to keep up.
Yeah, just stay with me. Yeah, stay with me. I have the people tell me, you don't finish your stories. I'm like, well, just stay with me. So
I'm not done yet.
I'll just make up the
end. He'll call you later.
Yeah. Like, wait a minute. I still got shit to share with you. Kirsten, this is what really happened. Yeah. So she's the one that called me and said, "Hey, I think you should really look into this because it's just a new program they started. And, you know, with your probation experience and with your recovery, I think you'd be really good at it. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be a good fit." So, you know, it's...
So how did you know that I was a provider?
I think I looked it up.
Oh, okay.
At the time, you know, when I was...
So you looked it up and you're like, oh, shit.
No, I was like... I don't even remember, but I was like... Adam Martin is like, this F5 thing, what the hell is he up to?
Everybody was like that. They were just like, Adam started a business?
Yeah. Well, even my, somebody else said to me, it's like, are you sure this is a good idea?
No.
Hooking up with Adam Martin.
But it was the same for me with like my crew. They were just like, you're going to partner with a cop?
Yeah.
I was like, well, he's not a cop anymore. And I was like.
He looks like one.
And they're like, well, he's not even a felon. And I was like, well, I mean, Facebook used to be for only college students. Like, eventually.
Yeah, it was an amazing idea. There was no way it could fail. Yeah,
I think we were the only ones that believed that it would work.
Right. I think we were.
I think he had some doubts, too, though. Like, because I know I'm not.
Well, tell the story.
I didn't have the greatest reputation at the time.
Like, well, and then to start, so I'm like telling Adam, it's like, I'm supposed to go to this training, and I'm like, dude, what? You know, I didn't want to be a pain in the ass either. Yeah,
yeah. Like care coordination training?
Yeah, in November, you know. And so I texted him. I said, hey, what's going on with the? He goes, what do you mean? And it'd been like a month, and this gal that worked for him hadn't done anything with it. She was kind of putting a block on it. Yep. She didn't want me there, and it turned out he didn't realize that she. Because I said, if you don't want to do this, it's cool. But just don't jerk my chain here. Let's just get this. I'll go do my thing, and
so
you can do your thing.
So fast forward, he got to the training.
Yeah.
And so everything worked out, and then everything just, like, went awesome.
So it was a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But it was kind of, it was seconds and inches there for a while, because he was ready to go.
Yep. Oh. I'm glad I didn't.
Glad you did, too.
Yeah.
And now, look, Scott, you're on top of the world now. You're on the podcast.
I'm on a podcast? I mean, who would have thunked?
Right? Yeah.
Him? On a podcast? My kids even said, you're going to do a podcast, Dad? I'm like, yeah, I don't know what it is, but I'm going to do it. It's going to be fun.
It will be fun.
This podcast was brought to you by Scotty's Corner.
They're a brand new
sponsor. We have to also mention that Tits Ricky's birthday.
Mm-hmm. She said it. She said it.
I don't think Darby realized.
A sweet new shirt.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Ricky.
Happy birthday, Ricky.
Yes.
What are you, 29?
Yeah. Not a day over.
No, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is like a perfect shirt, especially because March is International Women's Month.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, representing. And Yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, it's perfect for you. I mean, it depends on who's wearing it.
That's true.
Like, nobody else could wear that.
No. Yeah.
No. No, I wouldn't know.
Why?
If I wore it, they'd be like, you're a pig. Yeah. You're Ricky disgusting. Wears it, you're like, oh, you're amazing and you love women.
I think everybody should be able to appreciate a good rack. So
there you go. Mm-hmm.
We're in a bad rack. I don't know. All the racks.
I'm glad she's here saying all that stuff. Adam Martin is not saying any of this.
Nope. Yep, don't endorse it. Don't co-sign
not
it.
Not endorsing.
Just, nope.
Mm-mm. Nope. Just sitting here.
Yeah, those aren't real private. Put them out there. What you got them for?
Well,
they make days easier.
Thank the F5 Project. Thank the Ridge Treatment and Reentry Center. GoawayBear.com. Shirts from Fargo. Heat Transfer Warehouse. All of our amazing sponsors. If you guys want to continue to support this amazing podcast and, of course, our brand new co-host, feel free to please subscribe. Let us know if you love the show. You know, like us on Facebook, all the other amazing things. We have some amazing guests coming up this season and just all sorts of other really cool things. So thank you guys so much for being here. Appreciate you, Scotty. Glad to have you a part of it, man.
Thank you for letting me be a part of the team. You guys are rock stars, man. Everybody's talking about you.
Mm, we know.
Well, they are
That's
now.
All I need in a friend. Yep. Somebody that really likes me.
Yeah. Well, have a great day in recovery, y'all.
Peace out.